the old guy. You know, in 3 weeks, I turned 63. Hard to imagine, you know. Yeah, I'm just glad to be not I'm glad to be above. You know what? Today, though, this is so funny. They brought me a padded mat to stand on. I mean, they do love me, don't they, that they take care of my old feet. These old bones appreciate that, man. This is good stuff. Hey, I want to tell you something. I'd like to start a little different today, and I'm going to end a little differently. But you know what? I really believe that God engages us, and sometimes we get in a routine in church that we think there are only certain moments that we want to talk about that, or that we give evidence to the fact that God is working in our lives. And I just don't think that. I think right now God is in such a powerful mode in this place that He's working in our lives every day of every week. And I think for some of us today, there are some things. In fact, Ella and I were driving over to St. Louis the last 2 days to see our grandkids, and we always leave about 4:30 in the morning so that we can get over there at 9. Now, that's love, isn't it? I mean, I'm telling you, that's just love. But Ellen will sleep the first part of it, and then I will sleep the second part. And in this time, you know, I try to pray and just kind of go through things that I know are going to be happening on Sunday. But the Lord wouldn't even let me go to the teaching. It was all about, Lord, Rylan, I want you to be aware of some things. And there were just some, if you will, acronyms. The first one is just be aware. And I really think that there's an awareness right now for some of us. Please hear me. I think there is an awareness, even this moment, that somebody much bigger than you and me is working in your life. And that there is a sense today that God is drawing you closer and God is working in you. But that begins with an awareness that we finally realize, we come to some sense that this thing called life is just bigger than us. And this amazing God, through His Son Jesus, wants us to understand He loves us and desires to know us. And I'm talking about know us. The second thing about that is, though, is the word acknowledge. And I want us to not only be aware of God, I want us to acknowledge God. I want us to acknowledge His presence. You know, one of the footprints that we have as catalysts is that we are going to engage the Lord in worship and in prayer. And that takes some acknowledgement, friends. It calls on us to acknowledge that our God deserves our worship and deserves our praise and deserves our thanksgiving. And then the third one is just act. Because, you see, there's a moment, church, where we have to act. I mean, where we have to respond to this awareness that God is moving in us and changing us and touching us and motivating us to grow in Him. And so I don't want us to miss that fact. You know what? In 3 weeks, we're going to be starting our discipleship rhythm again. And I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you to act on this. You know, we have met with several people over the last few weeks and how discipleship has transformed their lives. And I want us to be at a place where we can acknowledge God in a way that we grow in our understanding of Him and we grow in our capacity to talk to Him about others. Amen? Because I promise you, you and I were brought to Jesus to help bring other people to Jesus. And that's important for us at Catalyst to understand this, because that is a basic premise of who we are as a congregation. We are not here for ourselves. We are here to help, I hope, light a path, make a path, create a path that will allow other people to come here and be a part of this. This has nothing to do with the teaching at all today. Aren't you happy? I want you to be aware today that God's working in your life. I want you to acknowledge your need for Him. And at some point, I want you to act on that. I want your life to take on a different pattern. I want you to take on a different rhythm in your life because Jesus Christ has come into your life. You know what? Today, we're going to talk about hope when life changes faster than we do. Now, I want you to know, none of us needs to be convinced that I think constant change is all around us. In fact, I was reading an article this week of the top 10 technological things that are going to transform our lives. This is number one, self-driving vehicles. Now, we think that's a sci-fi thing on the movies. I want to tell you, you can buy a Tesla right now, friends, that has all of the accident-avoiding features in that car that it will respond, even though you respond, it will respond over you. Artificial intelligence is changing and will change. Please hear me. In a short while, all of our vehicles will have this part of it. It's going to change how we drive and how we make trips. Ellen won't need to sleep that first hour. She can sit there and I'll sleep the whole time. The second one is voice interface technology. Did you know Google Homes right now? I mean, seriously, you can buy Google Home and you can make all of the changes inside your home from a distance anytime you want. Please hear me. Voice interface technology is going to change the way we do life. It will change the way we communicate, even with one another, but it's going to be a drastic shift. It's going to be a drastic shift for us when we come to a place that we do not have to be home to make some decisions and make some changes. And the third one is this, and it shocked me. It's 3D printers. Did you know that? I mean, these were super expensive just a short time ago because what do they have the capacity to do? They have the capacity to literally make something from a picture or a design. They have this capacity. But now, here's the crazy thing. They are becoming affordable. And I love this phrase because it tickles me. We always have an acronym for everything. Do you know what DIY means? Do it yourself. See, you're so cool. You're up to date. It's do it yourself. And this is taking on a whole new meaning with our culture today. And 3D printers literally give us the capacity to create, if you will, to design and fabricate parts within our own home. You won't have to go to the store to buy it. You can literally fabricate what you need inside your office or inside your garage, wherever the 3D printer will be. This is crazy stuff of how change is happening in our lives in a way that sometimes we're not even aware of it. But let's get to the point. For some of us today, change is a whole lot more personal. It's not about gadgets, it's not about gizmos. It's about our life. More specifically, it's about our lives changing in ways that are beyond our control, not our choice, and certainly, friends, changing faster than we want them to. Whether that be a child graduating from high school, going to college, whether that be a parent's health failing, and suddenly we're at a different place, whether that be a life of sudden unwanted singleness, whether that be parenthood in the early stages where you're just trying to figure out, when do I bathe this baby? Whether it be a job transition when you least expected it, or whether it be family moving and leaving you behind. You see, I want all of us to acknowledge that change can be unsettling, it can be unnerving, but I promise you, in some ways when it changes faster than we do, the reality of it is it might overwhelm us. So the teaching today is, how do you and I find hope? How do we allow God's word speak to us when life changes faster than we do? Because it can be so unsettling. I want to introduce you to a book today. It's just a book called Transitions, and it's called Making Sense of Life's Changes, especially when they're difficult or painful. It's written by a man named William Bridges. It's a very small book, but I want to tell you, it is a powerful, enlightening book that I really recommend to anybody that's going through changes or will be. And in this book, he notes that real change is broken down, if you will. He defines change as breaking down to an ending, a neutral zone, and a beginning. Now, I just want to begin today because I want to walk through this, and I want to do so by corresponding it, if you will, to the Israelites and how their change after leaving Israel is so much in tune with exactly where Bridges says change takes us. The first one is an ending. Bridges says the most important step in dealing with change is to understand that every change begins with an ending. We have to let go of something to move on to something new. In a physical way, this means we might be moving to a new address. A new job means that we move to a new place with new people. But please understand something, friends. Please understand something. Understanding change always begins with the necessity of understanding that we have to let something go. Something is ending. And that ending brings with it sorrow. It brings with it grief. And too many times in our lives, we want to pass over the ending in order to move quickly to a new beginning. And I promise you, when we do this, we don't connect with the loss. But I promise you, the loss always, ultimately, some point, sometime, somewhere, it connects with us. I'll never forget when we moved. As a young boy, I was 12 years old, and we moved from the house that my mom and dad had built as newlyweds. All three of their children were born into that home, and we moved at age 12 over to the farm where the place where my mom and dad would both pass away at years and years and years later. But I get off the bus one day, and I walk into our new home, and my mom is sitting at the table weeping. And I'm thinking to myself, I walked up to her because I was so concerned. I said, "Mom, what's the matter?" And she just looked at me and she said, "I just miss our old house." And I'm looking around thinking, "Mom, look what we got." But you see, my mom had not taken enough time to grieve what was lost. There is an ending, friends. I really believe in Joshua 1. That's exactly why God comes to Joshua and the Israelites. They're about to begin a new season of life. They're going to make their way to the promised land. And this is the phrase God opens the discussion with. He says, "Moses, my servant, is dead." What a rah-rah speech. And when we first read it, we think, man, God's callous here. He's cold here. God, you're just a little bit insensitive. But I want to tell you, that speaking these words, God's saying to Joshua, "Joshua, before there's going to be a new beginning, you've got to first understand, Joshua, there's going to have to be an end. And these people are going to grieve the loss of Moses. And if you try to move too quickly, Joshua, if you try to take them too quickly without acknowledging the loss and paying respect to that loss, he wants them to know. I want you to know, Joshua, there's going to be pain and there's going to be struggles." My friends, please hear me say something. We are the same. We have to be mindful. We have to be aware that every transition begins with an ending. And there is always a grief and a loss associated with an ending. Now, Bridges says, second, what we need to do is, this is going to take us to what he calls the neutral zone. Now, just work with me here, okay? Because the neutral zone is the most difficult part of the process of transition and change. It's often referred to as no man's land. You don't know if you're here, you don't know if you're there. You just know you're not where you used to be, and you're not quite where you're going. Any of you relate to this? No, we can. It's no man's land. And I promise you this, it is not a place you want to stay very long. Because if you do, you will have a tendency to retreat, or you will get stuck there. You ever met somebody that's stuck in no man's land? Listen, Carl and I work all the time with folks who are stuck in no man's land. You know, a lot of college students go through this. Any of you ever had your college students after about 3 months call you and say, "I want to come home"? Oh, they're so excited, they didn't even have time to talk to you when you dropped them off. They're out partying, they're out having fun, they're out making new friends, and suddenly after 3 months, what do they realize? Oh my goodness, look what I left behind. Look at the comfort, look at the home-cooked meals. Somebody else did my wash sometimes. And suddenly find themselves in no man's land, they call you and say, "Hey, look, I want to come home." I'll tell you, what is the most critical thing that a parent has to do at that point? Say no. You got to stick it out. Tell me you'll stick it out 2 semesters. Tell me you'll stick it out 2 semesters, and let's see where you are by spring. Let's just do that. And most of the time, in 2 to 3 more months, what happens? They love school. You see, friends, please hear me say something. One of the critical things for people, for organizations, even for congregations, one of the greatest mistakes and one of the poorest decisions we can ever make is making large choices in the middle of no man's land. Because those decisions are, most of the time, they're based on emotions and they're based on loss. And please hear me, they are not based on what is best for the whole, for the long term. Listen to what happens in Exodus 14. The Israelites have left Egypt, but now the emotions of leaving and the reality of a new normal has caught up with them. Listen to their words to Moses and see if you can find a hint of no man's land in it. And the Israelites said to Moses, "Why did you bring us out here to die in the wilderness? Weren't there enough graves for us in Egypt? What have you done to us, Moses? Why did you make us leave Egypt? Now, don't you love that? Why did you make us leave Egypt? He said, better to be a slave, they said, better to be a slave in Egypt than a corpse in the desert. You see, the easiest thing the Israelites ever did was march out of Egypt that day. Huge high. You want to know the hardest thing the Israelites did? They had to get used to being out of Egypt. Have you ever noticed that mine and your memories of how things used to be are always better than how things really used to be? That was particularly true for the Israelites, even though they were slaves. But think about it, friends. Think about if they had turned back. Think about what they would have missed. Think about never experiencing the promised land. Think about never seeing the goodness and the trustworthiness of God. It's true in so many scenarios for our lives. Many times people, many times organizations, many times even congregations are headed to a new beginning, maybe a new season of leadership, and all in all, this is exciting for everyone involved. But when that season starts, you have to remember there will always be an ending and there will always be a no man's land in between. Most of us don't want to go there. Most of us don't want to deal with it. But I tell you what, friends, it is a grave error not to. Because we want to hearken back to the good old days. But I promise you, the good old days weren't as good as we often think. In the midst of every change, every person passes through what's called the neutral zone. It is the most difficult phase because our natural tendency, our natural inclination is to want to turn back, to quit, or to take hold of what was comfortable. And that's why it's imperative, friends. That's why it's imperative that you and I push through. Let me just give you some critical reminders. Don't make major decisions in the neutral zone. And don't run away and try to escape it. And it brings us to our final phase, our beginning. Now, this is where new opportunities, and please hear me, new challenges will present themselves. To be honest, this is more most people want to begin. Let's just go to the beginning. But you can't, because I want you to know, please hear me, friends, there will always be struggles to overcome, no matter the end, the neutral zone, or the beginning. I mean, let me ask you a question. Anybody in this place who has brought together a new beginning by bringing together a blended family, and your whole new dynamic is new, would you say that there were no struggles in this new beginning? Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. The answer is no. You see, new beginnings have their own difficulties, their own struggles. And why is this? Because of this fact, friends, change is never, ever, ever easy. In fact, just turn to the person on your left and your right, and I want you to say this. I don't care who you are. I don't care where you are. I don't care how old you are. Change is never easy. Do that right now, will you? Please. Joshua understood this. Now notice, we find in Joshua 3 the Israelites are about to cross the Jordan River. They're about to take possession of the promised land. I mean, you can't imagine. Can you imagine the excitement of this? But listen to what he says. He says, so Joshua told the Israelites, come and listen to what the Lord your God says. Today you will know that the living God is among you. How powerful is that? He says, and he will surely, notice what he says, he will surely drive out the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites ahead of him. He wants them to know there's going to be a whole lot of ites to contend with. This is not going to be a walk in the park. New beginnings are not without its ites. But what we have to understand is he says, look. And he tells him, he gives him a visible, tangible thing. He says, look, this is the Ark of the Covenant. They're carrying with them that which represents the very presence and power of God in the midst of them. He says, and in this place is where the Lord resides. Now notice what he says. He says, I don't care. He's literally saying, he said, which belongs to the Lord. And notice what he said, of the whole earth, and he will lead you across the Jordan River. He said, I don't care how many ites there are, friends. Your God's big enough to conquer them. And he said, the priest will carry the ark of the Lord of the whole earth. He tells them that twice because he wants them to know the breadth of this God that walks with them. And he said, as soon as the priest's feet touch the water, the flow of the water will be cut off upstream, and the river will stand up like a wall. What a promise. What a declaration of faith that Moses is making to a group of people who are just coming out of 40 years in the wilderness. And Moses is, Joshua is literally saying to them, I want you to know something. He's still with you. You are not alone going into this place, into this change, into this transition. He's the same God that brought you out of Egypt, and he is the same God that's going to take you into the promised land. Now notice what he says. So the people left their camp. This is a powerful moment. So the people left their camp to cross the Jordan, and the priests who were carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. It was the harvest season. Now, Joshua wants you to know what season it is because he wants you to know this is not going to be an easy thing. It's the harvest season, and the Jordan was overflowing its banks. But as soon as the priests who were carrying the Ark touched the water at the river's edge, the water above that point began backing up a great distance away. You see, God just didn't show up a little. God's showing out a little right now. He's backing them way up. He said, until, notice what it says, until the riverbed was dry. And then the whole nation of Israel crossed over on dry ground. I want you to hear me something. Hear me say something. Joshua is instilling a principle, a foundational principle in the hearts, in the minds, in the acumen, if you will, of the Israelites. And this principle will be needed for this new beginning. Just like this principle that I'm about to share is needed for you and me to go through any season of change. And it is this. We can, and we should, trust God's trustworthiness. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. But just please notice, verse 5 just gives to us this simple foundational principle and statement. The writer just simply says, trust in the Lord. But you've got to understand what this means, because this is not just a simple understanding of trust. It means that you and I will have an assured reliance, an assured dependence on the very character and nature of God. This is who God is. It means that we will have a trust on the ability and the strength and the truth of God. Listen to how God's word defines it. Deuteronomy 23 says, God is the rock. Do you know what that means? He's the unmovable. He is that which is steadfast. He is that though life is changing too quickly around you, he is the rock. And his works are perfect. And all his ways are just. He is a faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just as he. Friends, when we pass through the waters of change, let us always constantly be aware of God's ability as compared to our own. We have to remember that our view is limited. God's view is limitless. Our understanding is finite. God's understanding is infinite. Our judgment is many times flawed. God's judgment is flawless. Our motives can be selfish. God's motives are selfless. Our thoughts are many times centered on ourselves. God's thoughts are always, always about the greater whole. You see, God stands on a mountain you and I can't stand. God fathoms what we can't fathom. God just simply sees what we can't see. But my friends, please hear me. In every season of change, in every season of change, we can trust God's trustworthiness because He is faithful and He has the capacity to take us through and to take us to the place we need to be. Notice what He says, just as a principle followed up with a promise, and He will make your paths straight. You know, years ago, Ellen and I and my brother Danny and his wife Jody, we took a trip to the Holy Lands, and we took about 50 to 60 people from our church. And I want you to know, it was a fabulous, fabulous trip. But one of the things you learned is that there are a lot of different customs in Israel than there are in the United States. One of those is eating. And in this eating, what you find is it's a real community thing. It's not like you section off a section where you're all alone, but they have community tables and you find your way there. Well, we stopped at this place hoping to find a really good falafel, and falafels there are just out of this world. And so we thought if we stop, but there were four or five other tour buses ahead of us, and so we said, hey, before we go into the main dining area, why don't we, maybe it's a good time for us to take a bathroom break and maybe things will clear out. So Danny and I lead the troops over. We finish up. We have a woman who is designated to go in and check the women's bathroom at the end. So we're there probably 15 or 20 minutes because it's packed too. And when we leave, Danny, I said, Danny, just go on in and you can start eating and I'll find y'all in there. So I'm waiting for the last, you know, kind of those stragglers who are making their way out. And we make our way into the dining hall and where everyone's seated. And I notice that, again, we're all mixed with different people, but I see Danny's shirt. And there's some other people of ours littered at this table, and I see his hair, so I know Dan's there. So I walk up to him, and I'm greeting everybody around me, just absolutely mindless about what's going on. And that happens quite a bit, my boys tell me. And so I put my hands on his shoulder, and I just start squeezing his traps, and suddenly Danny stands up, but it's not Danny. It is a very large man who's saying something to me in German, and I'm pretty sure it was not his Sunday school lesson. And then he and his counterpart there jumped and stormed out, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my goodness. So I walk outside. I said, I got to find Ellen and tell her this. I said, honey, you can't believe whose shoulders I was just rubbing. And she said, honey, why don't you tell me whose shoulders you were just rubbing? I said, it was some German guy. She said, you're rubbing some German guy's shoulders in the bathroom? I said, no. It was at the lunch table. She said, well, oh, that makes me feel a ton better. I do get into some predicaments, don't I? I want to ask you a question. If life is changing faster than you are, if you are headed to a new place, some by your design, some not by your design at all, if you are going through great change right now in your life, whose shoulders would you rather rest and depend upon? And the shoulders of God. Isaiah 48 says, I am the Lord your God who teaches you what is best for you and who directs you. Don't you love this? And who directs us in the way we should go. I told you I wanted to end the teaching a little bit different today. I don't know, is Nate here? Is Nate Bowers here? Nate, come up here for a second. This is total shock to Nate. We had an elders meeting this week. We have our monthly elders meeting, and this is a honestly, some of the greatest people, and I'm going to introduce some of them to you. But we finished our elders' meeting, and Nate and John and I are walking outside. Where's John? Nate and John and I are walking through the building, kind of awed at what's happening and what's going on. And then Nate looked at me. I'm going to grab you a mic, Nate.
Sure.
Let's grab one. Yeah. And Nate looked at me, and he goes, "Roland, do you realize what today is the anniversary of?" And I'm looking at him so perplexed, and I'm thinking, I hope it's not mine and Ellen's. No, just kidding. Just kidding. And I said, "No, Nate, I don't have a clue." Nate, tell us what was the anniversary this week of?
So it was interesting, I mean, because Ron was talking earlier today about how we forget sometimes about where we've come from.
Mm-hmm.
And this week was the one-year anniversary of when I made the announcement to the church last year that the purchase of the Rock had fallen through.
Now, some of you don't know this story. So the story is, we knew we had to find another place. We were told that our time at that other building was ending. And so we made a purchase, we made an offer on the Rock Church. It looked like it was perfect, didn't it, Nate? I mean, it looked like it was going to happen. We're all thinking, man, we're going to have a place. And then they called us. They didn't even reject the offer. They just took the whole thing off the market. Now, Nate, we were a little disappointed, weren't we?
Well, I would say we were more than disappointed.
Yeah.
And for those of you who haven't been with us for a while, at that point, our lease was up at the end of the year. So that was, we thought it was providential from God bringing that to us. And then when that fell through, you're kind of left at a standpoint of we didn't know where to go. We didn't know what to do. And we were at a point of panic for the most part. But it's amazing the thing that Ryland is talking about. In light of all that, there was a time of intense disappointment, a little bit of anger too. But then it was amazing. Directly after that, we felt the peace of God saying, "Trust in me and I'll direct your path." And we really, really leaned into that, and he brought us this.
Yeah, crazy.
So it's,
and when we had a directional team meeting, we said, "I just want to know, how are you feeling? Because let's express what we're doing." And Carrie looked at us and said this, "I felt all along we weren't dreaming big enough. And I believe God's got something more for us." A few months later, her crazy husband, Jeremy, right there, makes a phone call that changed the trajectory of this church. And the miracle of Blue Falls took place. Friends, I want to ask you this. Are we still disappointed today? Oh, no. But do we have a small sense today? Do we have a small sense today of what it's like to watch God part the waters? And to do what we couldn't imagine and bring what we couldn't even see nor comprehend? My friends, when life changes faster than we do, Nate, I don't want you to leave because I want you to pray.
Yes, sir.
I do love him.
I'm just glad I don't have to sing.
Oh, Nate, we're glad you don't. Yeah. We're really glad, Nate. No. When life changes faster than we do, here's a principle. Here's a principle that you hang your hat on and you stake your life on it. Trust in the Lord. Trust His character, trust His faithfulness, trust His ability, trust His strength. Trust the truth of who He is. Because if we do so, we are given this promise: He will make our paths straight. Hallelujah. 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 Praise the Lord. I'm going to ask, if you will, I want the team to go ahead and lead us in worship, and then we just want to close with a prayer of thanksgiving today, but I want to bring the rest of the elders up because, you know, some of you don't know our elders, but I want Nate and Joe and John and Nick to come on up, and these are people, friends, and I tell you, Jeff Janess and I talk about this all the time. These are people who have given unbelievable leadership to this church. And I want you to know them, but more than that, I want us to appreciate them today and tell them thank you for leading us through this amazing change. Can we do that? They're great people. Great people. And now I'm going to ask you to stand, and we're going to sing one more song, and then Nate, if you will, I'm going to ask you to close us in prayer. Can you hand me that? Thank you. I'm too old to jump down there. All right. There you go, Diana.